Hi, my name is Warner Lewis. Thank you for joining me for Creating Home, a weekly podcast exploring what different successful individuals have done to allow them to find their physical, emotional, and spiritual home. We'll discuss their individual journeys, including disadvantages, roadblocks, adversity, and dead ends, as well as their strategies, successes, and support, which allowed them to overcome obstacles and thrive. When I first thought of creating a real estate-focused podcast, it quickly expanded beyond chatting with past clients and friends about their real estate. While real estate provides my financial livelihood as a New York City real estate broker helping clients purchase and sell their homes for the past 15 years, my passion for it derives from expanding my life through the close relationships that are created during the process of finding a home. Indeed, a home to me is so much more than the physical walls in which we live, but it is also the actions we take to ground ourselves and find peace and acceptance, as well as the people with whom we surround ourselves and who give support and guidance. As we find ourselves spending more time at home these days, I have reflected on my own journey that started with the choice to go into this industry 16 years ago. At that time, I was basically unemployable, alone, deeply depressed, and truly felt that real estate was the last option I had and had avoided because if this didn't work, I felt I was out of options. The act of going into real estate and metaphorically burning the boats behind me and being all in on changing my life has led me to the place where I am today. I have an incredible business partner, Ari Harkove, and we have had one of the top 200 real estate sales teams in the nation for the past 5 years. I have a loving and deeply accommodating wife and two wonderful and exhausting kids and more true friendships than I ever dared hope for when I was a socially awkward and terrified kid. The hope is that in hearing what these intrepid individuals have gone through to get where they are today will be inspiring to others on their journey to find home and a sense of physical safety, emotional peace, and individual success in the sometimes raging storm of life. If that happens, then the goal of this podcast will have been met. Thank you for joining me today for Creating Home. I'm very excited to have my good friend and actor who you will have seen, because it seems like there isn't a television show that has been made in the past 10 years that he hasn't been in. I'm looking at his IMDb page right now, and it's Coyote, Ted K, Hightown, AJ and the Queen, Ray Donovan, LA Confidential, Looking for Alaska, Chicago PD, and Gotham, which he's, I think, Drew, you'd probably best known for now.
Yep, that's probably accurate. Yep.
Yeah, but Drew is someone who I met in Williamsburg when he was still living on the East Coast. We started our conversations on sports at a karate studio where both our sons went, and I don't think that lasted long for either one of them. But what resonated with me with Drew was just how insanely sincere and grounded and present an individual he was, especially for someone who is famous. And luckily for me, our friendship has grown. And I'm very happy to have him on today because to me, I feel like I've been collecting grounded, spiritually based, stoic souls in my life. And I put Drew at the absolute top of that. And I'm very interested in hearing myself and sharing with you, the listener, how someone from Indiana had the chutzpah to go to Hollywood and then become a success and then also deal with the ups and downs of being there. So Drew, thank you for joining us today. And I can't wait to hear more about your story and share it with our listeners.
Hey, Warner, what's up, man? Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. And I think this is a pretty cool thing you started. You know, I thought all real estate agents were just cheesy jerks, but you've proven me wrong. So I'm just kidding. This proves that there are many facets to your industry, and I love it. I really do. And you're really good at what you do. And it's going to be fun to have a chat with you, brother.
Well, thank you. So that it means a lot coming from you. And so we like to find out where someone physically is. And I know that you've been traveling a lot, but where are you currently? And then if you could tell us a little bit about your place in LA and what drew you to it.
Currently, we just finished a week-long drive across the country, or most of the way across the country from LA, where we've been quarantined since the beginning of this crazy pandemic. and where we live in the Valley, San Fernando Valley, to Indiana, where we are currently at. I'm currently at my sister's house in north of Indianapolis, and we are we decided after several months of quarantine that we needed to just hit the road. I grew up as a family that took road trips, and luckily my wife Veronica and my son Leo are road trip fans just like me. So we love to get on the open road, and we've had a great trip coming across. Hit all the major national parks in Utah, went through the Rockies, saw some family in Colorado Springs, and then cruised on the rest of the way to here in Indiana, which is, you know, my original home, the theme of this of your show. Indiana is home. And then I've made my home since I graduated college. I went to college at a place called DePaul University, southwestern Indiana. And then since I graduated, I've made my home in places that are completely different than here in Indiana. I've lived in, of course, LA and New York and Australia, all over the world. So it's kind of, it's fitting in some ways to be back here talking about home with you, because there's still aspects of Indiana that, and like any of us, where we grew up. And that's one of the things I love talking to you about too, Warner, is like, we grew up in totally different circumstances. Now that I've actually had the chance to live and work in New York, as I did for several years doing Gotham, and then the Pee-wee Herman show on Broadway before that, I really understand what it's like. New York was just this kind of like big mythical monster that, it seemed way too scary to actually try and attempt to understand. And then, after living there, you kind of say, okay, you can tame that monster from time to time. And but I can tell you 100% that it's a 180 from a small country town in Indiana. So it's good to be back here. It's good to be anywhere that, right now, to be out in the world. We're living in some very strange times. I think we'll look back on this period in our history and scratch our heads and say, wow, that was wild. And hopefully we can get back to normal sooner than later. But that's where I am at this current moment.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that the pandemic really has given a big chance to a lot of people, and I'm one of those who doesn't sit still, hasn't really sat with a lot of things that have happened in his life, and hence hasn't made a lot of changes that needed to be made. And I hope societally, with a lot of change that needs to happen, that hopefully is happening across the board, hopefully this, because of the lack, which is, I know, killing you and me, lack of sports and other things that can numb us out, that we really start treating each other as better human beings. And I think, knowing you, that's one of your central goals and guiding lights and sort of one of the pillars of who you are that came from your family. I'd say in particular, your father. Can you give us a little bit about young Drew Powell and, your upbringing and things that sort of helped give you the place from which you could do what I can only imagine would be absolutely terrifying, which is just jump in a car and drive to LA and try to become an actor?
I was thinking about this the other day, actually, about how there's a lot of actors I know, not all, but there's a large enough chunk of actors I know in LA or New York that, acting was kind of the refuge. They escaped the whatever was happening at home, bad situation, whatever. And, escape to LA and New York or wherever they are, and acting is the refuge. For me, it wasn't like that. It was the opposite. I had a great upbringing. I was one of the very lucky ones who I thought, growing up, everybody had it like I did. And then I grew up and realized, oh, no, I'm in the minority here of having a really stable, awesome, great parents, supportive, really got along well with my siblings. I have a younger brother, a younger sister. Acting was still a calling for me. It was still, from as early as I can remember, something I've loved: performing, singing, performing, and acting, all of that stuff. And so for me, it's I come at it from a different perspective, I guess. We were just talking about an actor that my wife worked with in Australia, who's done a lot of great stuff, but he had a lot of addiction problems and a lot of dark parts of his life. And you can kind of see that come through in his performance. There is this mysterious side to him that I know is partially because of that. So anyway, all that is to say that, yeah, I was really lucky in having, you know, a great upbringing. My dad and mom met in seminary there. Yeah, it's kind of hard to describe, but he was in the denominational leadership of the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, which is a progressive Protestant denomination. I had one of those, you know, obviously the religion church was the family business, but it was really open and affirming and, you know, non-judgmental, at least, you know, overall, at least in our family, part of my upbringing, which is, you know, not the case. I always tell people, like, it wasn't like Footloose. I promise it wasn't, you know, it wasn't you can't dance, you can't drink. It was none of that. It was one. And again, I feel like as I've grown up and talked to people, I realized I'm in the minority there too. A lot of people that grew up in religious households, as you kind of alluded to before, you know, there's a lot of people, you say the word religion and they're immediately turned off. And I get that. I understand that. I just happen to have a pretty great experience, though. And it's something that has certainly carried on in my life. And I've had a lot of interesting conversations as we in between setups on movie sets and TV sets all over the world with people who, you know, it's not something that's very common in my business to be someone that had a good experience with in spirituality growing up. So we've had a lot of interesting experiences over the years. And, you know, it's important to me that to have a basis of a grounding. But what's great, you know, my belief is that each to their own, and everyone gets to choose their own path, and whatever works for you is great. So no judgment here. And I certainly feel lucky that I have my own path.
Yeah, no, it's been very clear. And in the past, one of the first words my father ever said to me due to his depression was that if he ever met God, he'd punch him in the face. So that was my religious stance, and so it's always been, yeah, and so it was never sort of a part of my life besides being forced to go to church services at school or what have you. And you know what I found just so refreshing with you was what you see is what you get with Drew Pell. You are such a clear, clean, honest, open, loving, caring human being. I just never really found that before someone who was religious, because it felt to me like you're like, if you don't believe what I believe, then then either somehow I'm wrong, but like you're judging me, or it's a judgment of you. And either way, it's like it's kind of a battle or a war. And with you, it's, you know, it's always been, I'm religious. These are my beliefs, and that's it. There's never been even the slightest feeling that you thought less of me because of not being religious. You felt less of anyone because of that. It's just something that worked for, just as you said, it's something that worked for you and you're happy for it. And that's it. End.
Yeah. Well, I never understood the idea, because first of all, here's what we hear. The one thing we know is that nobody knows. Like, you know, nobody knows what happens, you know, when you die, you know, and nobody, this is not something, it's the great mystery, you know, that's the idea. And so for people to have the hubris to think that they have all the answers, it's just, I'm immediately turned off by that, because that's doesn't make sense to a rational mind. It's all about faith, you know, and I have to have a lot of faith in my life and in my business because there's no guarantees. And also, you know, my spirituality is ever evolving. You know, it changes as it should, as my life changes, as I understand the world in a different way. I just finished reading actually, yesterday on this trip on Audible, a book by a comedian and actor by the name of Pete Holmes, who, actually had a show on HBO called Crashing, which was, you know, partially set there in Brooklyn, in your hood. And he has a book called Comedy Sex God, where he talks about his upbringing as kind of an evangelical in the Midwest, you know, which is different than my experience. That was not me. But, you know, there were similarities into having that church upbringing. And then he's kind of, you know, went through this whole gamut of being an atheist after his first wife cheated on him and left him. And then kind of coming back into some of the more Eastern stuff. It's a really thought-provoking, interesting book. And one of the things I loved about what he said was he calls himself a Christ-leaning spiritualist, And I kind of like that idea. The template for me was laid out in Christianity, but you know, for somebody else, it might be Judaism or Islam or Buddhism or nothing, or nihilism, you know, or atheism or agnosticism. But that was, you know, but we, one of the things I love about this world is that we have this, you know, it is a mystery and things change and life changes. I had a great professor in college who taught New Testament. His name was Leslie James. Dr. James was from Trinidad and he had this great accent. He's like, Andro, I'm so excited. It's about the learning. You know, I can still hear his voice in my head. But he, you know, I learned a lot from him, you know, looking at the Bible and particularly the New Testament from a, you know, intellectual standpoint, and as a the book of literature, you know, what is this piece in its socio-political place in its time, all that stuff. Anyway, my point is that, you know, it is something that informs my life, but also is, you know, it's an aspect of my life. And I always feel like in anything, whatever we're talking about, I'd much rather see it than hear about it. So if you want to tell me something, that's one thing. But if I can see you living it, then that's something completely different. So I appreciate your kind words. You know, I certainly hope to live up to them. I don't know that I do, but I will strive to.
You seem to always be doing the right thing and having family first and human beings, everyone being a human being in your eyes. And that comes through loud and clear. And so, you know, with your faith, with your family,
except for Patriots fans. I hate all Patriots fans. Yeah. As a Colts fan, yeah, no. Yeah, no, exactly. No, are you kidding? That's deep. There's deep seated hatred for the Patriots
even
for all of us Colts fans.
Even so, after
yeah.
Brady. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, I can see that. They have stolen a lot of joy. Yeah, exactly.
Belichick's still there.
He'll still figure out a way to break your heart. I'm sure he will. But so you know, you took the leap to go to LA and obviously your family, your faith sort of allowed you to roll with the punches. You know, that, I think that's one of the things, again, I wasn't there for the infancy of your career, but what I've always taken from our conversations is things that haven't worked out for you were roles that you couldn't have get because you were on another show that turned out to be huge or that, you know, there was something that was awry that kept you from getting something that would have been amazing. It's for me, it's been so enlightening to see your attitude about it, where it's like, I would have loved to get it, but okay. And I think that the okay is because you see life on life's terms, that things go your way, things don't go your way. You have your family, you have your friendships, you have your faith. And as long as you have that, like everything else will figure itself out. And that's, I joke about with my wife, who's very grateful. I joked that she was basic because she was so grateful. And I realized like she's stoic. She just is grateful for what she has. What she doesn't have doesn't matter. And if you don't have that gratitude in your life, you're always going to be unhappy. And that's a place that I have been, being a aggressive New Yorker, always looking to get ahead and compare and contrast with my peers. And I think for me, what started this podcast and what's happened from the pandemic is this realization that what I don't have isn't salvation. It's what I do have that is. And you really always embody that. And I've always taken that from you. And I don't know if there are a few examples of that, or you can even talk through your thought process of things that haven't gone your way and how you've dealt with them and how you've turned them into positives.
Well, first of all, I can tell you that your wife's got it right. Christina's got it right when it comes to gratitude. I think that's something that, you know, is really important. You know, Mr. Rogers taught it, you know, and he's one of the, in my opinion, one of the mystics, one of the true, you know, teachers of our time. I go back to Mr. Rogers all the time. But, you know, learning to say thank you and appreciate what it is you have, that is a beautiful thing. And it's something I strive for. And it's something, you know, all those things you said are great, but they're really more things that I aspire to. It's hard, you know, when you don't get a job and you know, go back to our sports metaphors, you know, it's much more like baseball than say, you know, and batting average than it is, you know, basketball and shooting percentage or free throw percentage. Because, you know, you get maybe 1 in 10 jobs, maybe it's 1 in 20. And certainly if you added the scope of the things that I auditioned for, including like voiceovers or you know, certain commercials that I used to do, you know, it's probably 1 in 30, 40, 50. So your batting average is is pretty low. But it is, you know you're doing the thing that you love to do and you know that you're good at it, which comes over time. You know, the early years were tough. That was a time where, you know, I as you said, I packed up my Honda Accord and drove across country 2 weeks after I graduated college. And had, you know, my job was a part-time job as a youth director at a church, which is interesting that that comes back into it. And that's what got me out there. And then, you know, a year and a half, 2 years later, you know, I was only, all I had to do for the rest of my life was be an actor. That was my last day job, as it were. So there was a lot of those early years of like, okay, am I making the right decision? I did a thing, you know, early on where I made a deal with myself. Because, you know, I saw when I first got to town, I saw a lot of people that had moved out there to be an actor or, you know, be in the business, and then it never worked and they just kind of kept at it, which you would think that's what you're supposed to do, right? Well, sometimes that's not what you're supposed to do. Sometimes it's not because it's not an egalitarian system. You know, there's no right or wrong way to get a job in this business. It just, I know a lot of great actors that don't work. Not because they're not great actors, just because it's a weird business. So I promised myself I wasn't going to be one of those people. So I made a deal that every 6 months I would reassess, you know, where I was. And if I hadn't made steps forward, then I'd give myself a 6 month probationary period and then I'd go home. If, you know, after that, we hadn't made any progression in terms of career, whatever that, you know, that wasn't specific, but the idea is that keep pushing the ball forward. And lucky enough, you know, early on, I was able to get this job on a show called Malcolm in the Middle. And that's a whole nother story for a whole nother podcast of getting that job and how that all happened. But I actually talked about it. I was lucky enough to give the commencement address at DePaul, my alma mater, last spring. That was a really huge honor for me. And I talked a little bit about that first job. So you can YouTube that and you'll see that story. But you know, that was for me. You know, I was off to the races at that point, and was lucky to have that. But yeah, you have to deal with a lot of negativity, and you have to have faith. You know, I have a necklace that was given to me by a friend. It's a pendant, actually. It's a guitar pick. I play the guitar some and sing some, and it has the word faith on it, and I wear it often because it's a reminder of the importance of faith in my life and in all aspects. Yeah, I'm sure I've told you over the years the litany of big jobs that I was second place in, and just in the last couple of years, big projects that most of the people that are listening to this would know about, that I was the number two guy. And guess what? They don't pay you for number two, and you don't get credit for number two. you know in your heart that you did well enough that you could have gotten the job, but you just didn't. So. Those are the moments that you got to kind of, and luckily I have a very supportive, you know, family. My wife and my son and my extended family are there, and that makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, it's funny. This morning I left my building and ran into someone who is now moving on, and I thought that it was a path that we would take together of finding something for her, and, you know, something else occurred, and it caught me off guard for a second, and usually it was something that would spin me out greatly, but because of the, you know, a lot of reading I've been doing, because of honestly doing this podcast and talking to people like you once a week, twice a week, I was somewhat surprised with the difference of my opinion of it, which was basically, okay, I hope I'm good for her. I hope her nothing but the best. And on to the next one. Just completely let it go.
That's great.
You know, root for everyone instead of holding on to any angst or worry or anything else. And it's funny how much simpler and cleaner a way it is to live, but so antithetical to how I've always done things. And which is why for me, this, you know, doing this and talking to the very, very, very spiritually based, thoughtful people that I've been talking to have been helping me, because I've, you know, I'm the atypical stereotypical, I should say, New Yorker who had this insane algorithm of what success was and how to get people to like you and how you should seem. And it's just, at the end of the day, it's all bullshit. Like as a book, I was just, you know, as Marcus Aurelius said, Alexander the Great and his mule driver end up in the same place. And so all these accoutrements mean nothing. It's, you know, your ability to just roll with life and be grateful for what you have. And that's the freedom. And that's the thing. It's so simple. And I don't know why it's taken me so long and seemingly so many others as well, just to be like, God, like, how lucky are we in the face of everything? We're incredibly fortunate. There are things I'd like to be different, but man, if we can't be thankful for the baseline that we have, we're going to be miserable to ourselves and those around us. And so, I've always seen with you and heard with you, it was just such an easy sort of water off a duck's back. And, you know, on top of that, there's always been with you this, you know, there's a Churchill phrase that success is going from failure to failure without a lack of exuberance. And, you know, I think that is you. You always pop up doing the coolest things ever that I think would be wildly intimidating, whether it's giving the commencement speech at DePauw, being the de facto face of the Colts. And I'm like, you're hanging out with T.Y. Hilton. Of course, Drew's hanging out with T.Y. Hilton. What is it about you and your mentality that, in my mind, allows you to say yes to everything?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if I'm honest, it's more about me just being in people's faces, being like, hey, you need me to come and hit the anvil before the game. You need me to, I'm available. But I do feel like there is something to be said for the carpe diem mentality. We only get one shot at this thing and this life, and so you know. Why not go for it? And yeah, I learned early in LA when I got there, someone told me early, it's like, you have to be your own best advocate. Your agent, somebody said your agent takes 10%. They're going to do, probably 10% of the work. It's up to you to do the other 90. And that means, putting yourself out there. That means it's a relationship business, just like yours. You know, you have to be, I believe you have to, on some level, there's talent. You have to be able to do the work. But then on top of that, are you someone that people want to work with? Are you someone that's easy to work with, that people want to be around? I think that's important. And that's true for anything, whether it's, the stuff I do for my job or the extracurricular stuff. So, I'm definitely a carpe diem kind of guy. and that's been fun to be afforded some opportunities because of the business, which I'll be the first to tell you, like, I don't deserve them, but I'll take it. That's just the way it goes. And on the other side of that same coin, we're living in a really weird time. You talk about being grateful and being lucky, and that is so true. But we also are in a time of reckoning when it comes to you and I have some serious white privilege. Mm-hmm. And this whole Black Lives Matter movement that has taken the nation by storm, taking the world by storm. I just saw an incredible documentary on ESPN from last year called The Australian Dream, which I would highly recommend, about this Australian rules football player named Adam Goods, his quest to fight racism in Australia. This is time for us to use our platforms to help this revolution take place, because it's been too long that there hasn't been equity in our country, and we need to push forward on that. And it's unsettling, that on top of the pandemic, on top of the madness happening in Washington D.C. I mean, it's just. So I heard Christine Baranski on Fresh Air yesterday say it feels like we're in free fall, mm-hmm. and I agree with her. But it's people like us that can kind of keep our eyes open and eyes on the prize of what is good and what is just and what is right, to continue to use that platform for good and to try and help our brothers and sisters that need a leg up. That is what we are called to do, not from a religious standpoint, although it certainly is in the Christian faith, and I know it is in other faiths as well, but just from a humanity standpoint. Do unto others, for crying out loud. I've been a little disheartened at seeing folks that I know over the years not get that. It's then even more important for us to kind of continue to carry the banner to say, no, we're not going to stand for this. It's time to make a change. And we have, you and I both have the privilege and the grace to kind of help people see that. We're very lucky, and that is definitely something I think about all the time.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that. Those are core tenets of the Bible. It's seemingly, that's the problem with with most people I find to be religious is it doesn't seem much like most people who like to protect their rights in the Constitution. It doesn't seem they've read the Bible or the Constitution. It's sort of their own interpretation that really works well for them personally, not the one that works for everyone. I mean, it's, you know, at the end of the day, everyone on this planet is a human being. We are all human beings. We all have emotions.
Yep.
We all can feel joy and pain. It is just been mind blowing to me over the past 5 to 10 years, being someone who grew up in New York City and grew up playing sports and grew up, you know, at the melting pot of diversity, but still thinking that he wasn't in a bubble, thought he had a grasp fully of what other people's experiences are, and to realize I don't even have a clue. I can maybe just barely begin to understand it. But, you know, as you said very clearly, there's a level of privilege. And I've said this before, and we just taped something yesterday of someone where I joked that I could be the greatest assassin of all time because no one would ever stop me going anywhere. And it's just, and it's you know, I laugh about that. But then I, you know, I talk to friends who are like, Warner, when I leave the house, I have to say, how do I appear? I've got to make sure I don't look at certain people. I've got to stay away from the cops. I've got to do all this. Just, and this is just going outside. I mean, for, you know, we were taught if there's an issue, you go find a cop. And it's just, you know, Greg Popovich, I remember hearing him speak, and he was the first one who sort of opened my eyes to just talking about experiences that his players have. And it's just like, how the fuck can things be so different?
If you saw yesterday, you know, the one of our the maniac, you know, for the Colts, one of our great linebackers was kicked out of a Chipotle for sitting there because, you know, some white guy said that he and his family were, you know, causing trouble, which they weren't. And they, you know, like this stuff is happening. That happened yesterday in South Carolina, in Florence, South Carolina. You know, this is like, you know, this is the stuff that is happening on a daily basis to our brothers and sisters of color. And it's 2020, man. It's time for that to stop. And people are hanging on, and they changed it. You know, with Kaepernick 4 years ago, it was like, well, he's disrespecting the flag, which is completely ridiculous. You know, he got the kneeling from a Navy SEAL who suggested that as a way to you know, protest in a respectful manner. This is the kind of stuff. It took 4 years for the general public to kind of realize, like, hang on a second, you know, we were wrong. You know, many in the majority. And so now is the time for us to stand up, you know, and it's incumbent on us as white folks to do that. And so you're right. Everything you said, right on. It's a double standard. That's got to stop. It's going to take a while. Look, this is not an easy fix. But now that we're, you know, now that the cat is out of the bag, and now that the lid is blown off this thing, it's important for us to keep our foot, you know, to keep our foot on the gas and make sure we keep going and keep moving forward.
Yeah, no, and then that if there is an upside to a Trump presidency and a coronavirus, it's the fact that, you know, I've said from the beginning with Trump, I thought he was going to be the dye that would show I hoped he would be the dye that would show the cancer in the system. And he's been that beyond, you know, beyond any measure that I could have imagined. Sure. And, you know, coronavirus and COVID, there's so many families that are affected. There's one in five children now who are going hungry because of the economy basically being shut down. There are horrible things happening, but it is a chance. Out of even the worst things that happen, good things can come. And my very big hope is that people can look inward. And instead of being the one who, you know, someone's had a tough life in their life, they're happier that others are now unhappy or that they have some caste system that allows them to look down on others. I just wish that everyone could use the tenets of the Bible to say, you know, the meek shall inherit the earth. I don't do unto others what you want to be done unto you. And just, again, be the change that you want to see. Like, you had a tough upbringing. Okay, just hope the next person doesn't. Don't perpetrate it.
Yeah,
on down the line.
Absolutely. Well, I give you a lot of credit, Warner, for that. You know, you mentioned your father. You mentioned, you know, your upbringing and had the struggles and how you've, instead of, a lot of people use that as an excuse, you know, like, well, that's it. And, you know, you've found a way to turn that around and say, no, I'm not going to be like that. I'm not going to be like that for my kids. And so it's, when I hear stories like that, and I have a lot of friends in that similar situation, that I have so much admiration for that, because that's, you're breaking that cycle, you're breaking that chain and starting fresh. And, you know, it's easy for those of us that kind of had the path laid out for us and had, you know, forward thinking and loving, you know, upbringing, but, you know, 10 times harder when you have to do that on your own. So kudos to you and the others out there that are doing that.
Yeah. You know, I will say that from my upbringing, there was no lack of love and attention. It was just a very genetic depression based thing that brought some conversations that 5-year-olds probably shouldn't be having into the mix that definitely shaped me in a way that didn't help me become the person that the best father, best husband, or best friend in a lot of instances. And so that this time is all the things that I could imagine going wrong have gone wrong. And it's given me space that I wouldn't have otherwise. And hopefully a lot of other people to say, okay, I've got to change. And, you know, Michael Chernow, who was on previously, had a great saying that his grandmother said to him, because he had a very fraught relationship with his father, that his grandmother said to him, you're never going to change another person, but you can change yourself. So just always remember, bless him, change me. And I realize that's the biggest thing. And right now for everyone, it's someone else isn't who you want them to be. Well, that's up to them, but you can change your viewpoint on it. And I really, you know, vis-a-vis my relationships, the really important relationships in my life, I've come to find that I have fallen short in a lot of them. Because I've been looking for others to do for me what I need to do for myself. And
absolutely.
You know, it's hard to realize that you got work to do. And I would have imagined at 45, I'm pretty much a finished product, but I'm nowhere near that. And I think this, you know, this podcast and a lot of other things I'm trying to do is just the realization. And this is what I see you living your life every day doing. But it's this weird duality where the more I do for others, the better I feel myself. But when it comes to compassion and loving myself, if I don't do that for myself and I look for others to do it for me, I'm completely screwed. Because that's not their job.
Definitely.
I've got to be there. Absolutely. As you said, you got to be your number one advocate in Hollywood. I've got to be my number one advocate, because it's not my wife, son, business partner's, mom's, brother's responsibility to do that for me. And if I can't treat myself with compassion, guess what? I'm not going to treat anyone else around me with compassion. And so,
it's hard.
Yeah, I love beating myself up. I've done it my whole life, but it's just, you know, I'm on the back nine now, and my goal is to not live like I lived the front nine. And, you know, am I going to make huge leaps day by day? No, but the little ones where things that would have set me off to the world is ending, to realize, you know, okay, so that didn't work out. On to the next one.
Yeah.
And that's just a very new attitude for me. And it's really been helpful talking to and meeting over the last decade. And I think I was a lot healthier person to be around people like you who sort of just live life that way. And whether you were fortunate or not, I know a lot of people who were fortunate with great parents, great upbringings, and still chose to not be good human beings. So, you know, you really are, and this is why so many people flock to you. You're a guiding light of how one should live their life. And, you know, you as a father, you as a husband, you know, it's something to be admired. And obviously just how you live your life. And I even said, you've got one chance, you got one go around, and you're making the most of it. Yeah. And for me, you know, this podcast is dipping my toe in the water. It's kind of terrifying for me, because I want to be perfect. And perfection is, you know, it is the biggest thing that keeps me small, or the attempt to be perfect. And so, you know, it's very heartening. It's very helpful for me, and to have someone at your stature and who does performing for a living, where for me, this is, you know, feel somewhat naked in the classroom doing it. But, you know, I thank you so much for taking the time to do this. And, you know, I don't know if you have any sort of parting words for anyone out there who, for whatever they're dealing with, just to, you know, kind of help them get through and find a sunnier day or a safer place.
First of all, thanks for all those kind words. I am happy to be here, and I really applaud you for you know, diving in and trying something new. I think that's really important in life, to push yourself and expand and try new things. And certainly that's the case in my life. I had to do a lot of jumping in and hoping for the best. But as this podcast is, as it relates to home, since that's the name of it, I would also say that it is important to find a home, whatever that is, you know, and it's certainly not the traditional, you know, 2.5 kids and a white picket fence in the house in the suburbs. It's home. By home, I mean finding your place where you can feel safe with people that love you, and using that as your touchstone. You know, for me, when I go out into that crazy world and get knocked back and told that, you know, which has literally happened, it's like, oh, you know, oh, you were too big for that role. They wanted somebody with a little more edgy hair. I mean, that was literally a thing that someone said one time. Like, you know, like the myriad ways in which I've been turned down over my career, to be able to have my touchstone, which was home, which was my family, which was, you know, the place where I felt safe. That's what got me through it. So that's what I would say, is find your home and nurture it. And if you don't have one, Warner can sell you one. So just give him a call. But no, find it, nurture it, and use it when you need it.
Well, Drew, thank you for those parting words. Thank you so much. Listeners wouldn't know, but this has been take 3 or 4. I'm trying to do this. And so your patience and persistence on something that, you know, we don't know what fruit it will bear, but it sort of just speaks to you as a friend and an incredible human being to stick with me on this. And I appreciate it greatly. And I can't wait to see you and catch a sporting event, whenever that may be, but at least be able to chat about sports again. But until then, you know, I think you said it best. The best thing we can do is help others and kick down some doors that should have been kicked down ages ago, or at least help that happen. So thank you, Drew. Have a great time in Indiana, and I'm sure we'll be talking soon.
Sounds good, buddy. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Creating Home. While we all face this new and uncertain world, I find it inspirational and reassuring to learn of our guests' journeys from around the country, and I hope you do too. Join us next week as we continue to learn what goes into creating home.